in order for nothing to be expedient, it must be lawful. Nevertheless, that's where the principles of receiving something that we find in the rest of the lesson, that's where some of those principles come from. People make an argument for only believers is exceedingly beneficial. My thinking is lawful. First and foremost, is lawful. And then we'll talk about the business in the future. But this expediency may only be lawfully applied to general authority. Elevated your expediency above the law. Okay.
Number six, where may a church come together for assembly?
Any location
facility that's expeditious to fulfill the command? The command is come together in one place.
Thank you.
look up. The song readers, song books, and or pitch things change the type of music God has specified to be used in worship. But all those things are things. Okay? All those things are beneficial. Okay? Do people attempt to justify both of these instrumental accompaniment in worship? Do they attempt to justify it as an exception by saying, well, it helps our singing. It's beneficial for our singing. So yes, they appeal to the exception, but they negate the specific authority. Specific authority to sing. Make melody in your heart. Not on the heart, but in your heart. Okay? So those are specific statements. And when we said, well, it's beneficial for us to add a piano or an organ or 20 piece orchestra up here, it's not violently. You raise your expectancy above the ball. Is a baptistry an excuse? Yes. We are to baptize repentant sinners. Put them under water. Pardon? Benefit advantageous.
But not lawful. Because baptism is lawful and it can be anywhere.
I didn't say that.
Oh, what did you say?
Well, good question. Huh? I have to walk back to the So the question is, did the baptistry and its feeding, is it beneficial, is it advantageous to putting somebody under the water? The question is an exceeding? The answer is yes.
Okay.
Do you have to have a baptism?
No.
Do you have to baptize someone in order for them to be saved?
Yes.
Where do you baptize them? Pardon me? If the heater is good.
Yeah.
Even then, it's probably better. Can you do that?
Yes.
Why not?
It doesn't change the command.
That's right. I've done that several times. I was going to put it in the
wrong way. It only takes a couple of seconds, so it's okay.
Okay. Number 9. Is it expedient for a church to have fundraising programs to meet their financial obligations?
No.
get a box in the back? Any of those transgressive organizations, did they view them as an expedient? Did they view them as, well, this would be beneficial if one of our donors was identified as the head elder. And he could be the head elder of other congregations around, you know, trying to keep track of where they're supposed to be and all that. And did they view that as beneficial? Can you imagine the fact? But they were not lawful. It wasn't authorized by Christ. It violated what was authorized by the law of Christ. So what happened was, by therapy, they elevated their obedience, their beneficial, above the law.
Problems and the people seek to get help outside and then they combine their forces and start
some denomination anyway, of these congregations are feeding the confidence of the church. This book. on the left and home. There's been several different ones. People appeal to that on the basis of expediency. So they violated the principle of Proverbs 10 that it's not lawful. But the other part of it, another part of the argument is saying that at those things are being discussed in the, I remember it, the 60s and 70s, was you've got brethren that don't accept that. You know, that's an affront to their conscience. They cannot conscientiously endorse that and practice that. And so there's the other violence. All things are all between, but not all things identify. Okay. So the introduction of these organizations didn't build up the church and divide the church. You know, so it was wrong on that basis as well. The summation of what he had to say there, verse 31 and 32, I think it's pointing out 79, verse 28, if any man says to me, this is offering sacrifice to idols, do not eat for his sake, but show it, and for conscience sake, and for the purpose of the Lord thereof. And then he kind of specifically identifies, well, who is any man? He does it. Chapter 8 means that any man also, but the context of chapter 8, obviously, several times he says, your brother. Okay. So it seems to me brother would be the focus there in 1 Corinthians chapter 8. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, there is a summation. Whether therefore you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God, if none to him. Those, you might think that those are two attached things, but they're actually, in this context, they're actually attached. Because when he says, do all to the glory of God, give none offense, because if you give offense to anyone, then you're not glorifying God by what you're doing to offend. You understand? Okay? So, give none offense, neither to the Jews, nor to the Gentiles, nor to the church of God. And when he says Jews, he means unbelieving Jews, non-Christian Jews. Okay? Gentiles, certainly, non-Christian. Nor to the church of God. But especially, when he says nor to the church of God, he's making these groups distinct. The Jews and the Gentiles are distinct from the church of God. Okay? Give none of it. Even if I please all men and all things, not just in my own profit, but the profit of many, that they may be saved. Okay? So give thanks. So in this context, 1 Corinthians chapter 10, okay, it's interesting because verse 25, whatever is sold in the camp
market, you don't have to ask, was this offered in sacrifice to idols? Don't have to ask that, because the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. Okay? Verse 27. If any of them that believe not, an unbeliever, bids you to a feast, and you be disposed to go, whatever is set before you, eat, asking no questions for conscience' sake. You're invited to a party. Whatever's served, eat it. Don't ask any questions, because the earth is the Lord's and fullness thereof. Okay? What I've cleansed, don't call common. You could even throw that into there if you wanted to. But, verse 28, but if any man say unto you, this is offered in sacrifice to idols, eat not for his sake that showed it and for conscience' sake. Okay? For his conscience' sake. Don't eat it. Okay? Because you're losing your influence with him. Okay? That's the point that he's making. So, can you buy whatever in the marketplace? Can you eat whatever served at a party? Yep. If somebody says, this is offered in a sacrifice to idols, don't do it, he says, because you're losing your influence with them. Now they're viewing you as a hypocrite, okay? And you've just lost all of your influence with them. Okay? And your mission as a follower of Christ is to seek and save the lost. Okay? He makes a statement down here in verse 30 that's kind of, I don't know, I don't get it at first reading. I have to read it several times and think about it. But anyway, it says, for if by grace, well, it actually begins in the latter part of verse 29. Why is my liberty judged of another man's conscience? If I have liberty to buy whatever's in the marketplace, to eat whatever's before me at the party, why is my liberty judged by another man's conscience? If I by grace be a partaker, why am I evil spoken of for that which I give thanks? Okay. So if the Lord has authorized it, and somebody says, don't eat this because it's offered in sacrifice to idols. Okay. What he's saying is, and he answers it, whatever you eat or drink, do also to the glory of God, not giving offense. You see, it's okay to let somebody's conscience rule your liberty, I guess would be a way to say it. Yeah.
In the context of the age, we talk about meat entertaining that and working on it, but this emphasis is on what? It's on love. And the thing is, they're missing the whole point.
You're absolutely right.
And we care about our brother.
Yeah.
He may be a weak one or an error, or he may be tough. He may be a newcomer.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to take that into consideration.
Yeah.
And that's what he does here. And he says,
yeah.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
And have compassion and love for this person.
You are absolutely right. That the one who has knowledge, his focus is upon, hey, I'm enlightened, I've got it, you know, no problem. Okay? But the problem is that if he does it without violating the conscience of his brother, or even a non-brother, okay, he's not doing it in love. And that's the first point that he makes in chapter 8. Chapter 8, verse 1, he says, as touching things offered to idols, we know that we all have knowledge. Okay? And that's in, you know, it's I made the mention Sunday night of the fact that Paul is aware of their justifying arguments, okay? And this was their justifying argument. We have knowledge, okay? Well, we all have knowledge. And he's not disagreeing with that. He's not challenging that, okay? But the only way that you can read this and make any sense of it is to recognize that the reason he said this is because that's what they were saying. And then he answers it. Otherwise, it sounds like a bunch of double talk. Okay. We know that we all have knowledge. Knowledge puffs up, but charity edifies. Knowledge, we have knowledge. Look at us, you know. Focuses on self, okay. But love builds up, okay. And this is really interesting. I mean, 1 Corinthians 8, 9, 9 is kind of an interlude, but he makes a point in chapter 9 along this same line about what he had given up. What had he given up with the Corinthians that he makes in chapter 9? You remember? Can you support somebody who preaches? Can a congregation support someone? Yes. Had Paul taken support from the church at Corinth? No. Why? Because they weren't ready for it. They had a conscientious objection against it. Okay? And so he didn't force it. They weren't ready for it. And he makes the point here in verse 12, if others be partakers of this power over you, why not we, the apostles, rather? Nevertheless, we have not used this power, but suffer all things, lest we should hinder the gospel of Christ. Okay? And I believe that's exactly what he's referring to when you come over here to verse 33 of chapter 10. In chapter 10, when he says, I please all men in all things, not seeking my own profit, but the profit of many, that they might be saved. You see, he'll make the point here, become all things, all men. Okay? I'm just trying to save people. Okay? And not offend anybody. Okay, and so, do I have liberty to do it? Yeah. Is it authorized for me to do it? Yeah. But if what I'm doing is authorized becomes a stumbling block to someone, I need to back off of it. Okay.
That's where you need to educate.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You don't just let them continue to be, you know, without knowledge of the truth on this. I mean, he was educating them on the matter of, you know, supporting your preacher, okay? He was educating them in chapter 9, okay? But he said, I haven't taken it, okay? But he was still educating them, okay? And so, you don't let somebody's conscience become the rule of the church, you know? So there's that, you know? So, anyway, I think the next thing we go to is the authority of the silence of the Scriptures, which we've really kind of noticed a lot of that already, but we'll make a point of it. Now, how did the Scriptures make a point of it? Yeah. Uh-huh. It's not in her family, but it's a close friend. Yeah. Yeah, I talked to them Monday, and they've been told to find a neurologist. And they were working towards that, and the only one they had found at that time was like next month, but they were still looking for another one that might be able to get her in sooner. But she had an episode, was confused Sunday morning, and so that's the situation there. Okay.